669, WPFWFM.org. This is the way that you can make a difference right now by supporting $768 to go, a minute to do it, although you can continue to support Democracy Now! Even after the program has finished, as others have done. That is totally fine as we move into what's at stake. But again, I just want to urge you to make that call that makes the difference. 800-222-9739, $768. What's at Stake with Verna Avery Brown is up next. You're in tune to your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
The National Museum of African American History and Culture is our history being dismantled piece by the Trump administration, or is it all talk and little action? Stick with us, we'll tell you. Back in a moment. Welcome to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Well, President Donald Trump is under the illusion that he is actually king of the U.S., not the president. He has defied U.S. Supreme Court orders, told NBC's Meet the Press moderator Kristen Welker on Sunday he doesn't know if he has to follow the Constitution because he's not a lawyer. That was in response to a question asking if everyone in the U.S. deserved due process. His illusions of grandeur went so far as posting an AI-generated photo of himself dressed like the Pope. And it's no wonder he believes himself to be invincible, because even after firing thousands of blameless federal employees, alienating longtime allies like Canada, disrupting the U.S. and global economy with his tariff wars, eliminating a number of life-saving humanitarian aid programs, putting incompetent Fox News hosts in positions of power, and bullying major law firms and academic institutions into illegal deals, the majority of people who voted for him to serve a second term are okay with their vote and say they would do it again. A Public Religion Research Institute poll found that 92% of Trump voters are comfortable with their vote. And those results mirrored another poll that found only 2% say they regret their vote. So among his base, no buyer's remorse, not yet, but nationally, his approval rating has plummeted to 39%. At the same time, there are massive rallies throughout the country, including in red states, calling for Trump's impeachment. At a Republican town hall in a swing New York district, an elderly woman was actually forcefully carried out by police when she insisted on having Republican lawmaker Mike Lawler answer her question, what would it take for him to stand up to Trump? A nationwide organization hosting protests across the country in the name of Hands Off held Labor Day rallies this past weekend in Washington, D.C. The Hands Off protest marched to the African American Museum to highlight the fact that Trump has issued an executive order to eliminate, quote, improper, divisive, or anti-American ideology throughout the Smithsonian Institution museums, end quote. And that's the focus of this morning's What's at Stake, the National Museum of African American History and Culture. I have three guests in the studio: Melanie Campbell, CEO and president of the National Coalition of Black Civic Participation. She was one of the leaders in the hands-off protest on Saturday. Good morning, Melanie.
Good morning. Good morning.
And James Early. He wears many hats, but for the purpose of this discussion, he is retired Assistant Secretary for Education and Public Service at the Smithsonian for over three decades. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
And Pamela Threl, entrepreneur and natural hair care expert, owner of Cornrows and Company. And for the purpose of our discussion this morning, she has several of her personal artifacts on exhibit in the museum. Good morning, Pamela.
Good morning.
And good morning to all of you. And thank you for joining us this morning on What's at Stake. So, Melanie, I want to start with you. What motivated you to participate in a hands-off march and rally on Saturday?
First of all, thank you. I'm just honored to be here. I'm off mute.
Yes, we hear you now.
You hear me now? What motivated me was just hearing about that executive order, right? And not just that, but some of the other things that have been this particular regime, I don't call it an administration, has really been going after culture, going as a part, I believe, is him doing the attempt of being an authoritarian state. And so if you want to be authoritarian, you have to control what people learn. You control how you make, who can have money, who can't have money. You're above the law. And so it's one of the things that is a part of this particular moment that we're living in, where the actual governmental lifestyle that we're used to is really under attack. And so going after culture and going after African Americans is a longer term history lesson. And I come from a great big city of Mims, Florida, where Harry and Harriet T. Moore house was bombed in the 50s. And my mother was a public school teacher. And in the 70s, and when I was growing up, she helped put Black history in the school system. So understanding that, and understanding even before Trump got in office, what they did and are still trying to do in Florida, which is take history out of Black history out of the school system, and anything dealing with diversity, equity, and inclusion, not as a not just about the words, but actually indeed and impacting our way of life in African American life. And so we have to fight back. It's a part of this, our resistance is to fight back, but also to know that to put the word and understanding, you don't define our history. You know, you can't erase our history. You may take it out of a building, but you don't have the control of Black history and who we are as a people. So we wanted to make that statement, engage, and also call on the ancestors, quite frankly. We had Reverend Willie Wilson out there. We poured libations, and we had the African drums, and we really, really wanted to also call a higher power in this moment.
So there are thousands of historic artifacts and memorabilia and treasures actually exhibited in that museum, each representing the strength, the perseverance, the brilliance, and basically the pure genius of African Americans throughout our history, that it seems to hold a spiritual energy, that museum. It's sacred, meaning in many ways. And for someone to order that parts of it be dismantled feels sacrilegious. Did the people marching with you on Saturday express any of those type of feelings?
Almost definitely. We had a high school student who was one of our speakers, who, in my opinion, I was a speaker, but she, in 12th grade, she's the youth mayor for the District of Columbia, Tatum. And Tatum really captured the moment and what it meant for our people, and understood as a young person the significance of it, the significance of what it means when someone is trying to take away your, erase you from your contributions and all of that. So there was a lot of energy. And there were other people who weren't African-American who joined us. What was interesting is people saw us marching, and we said we were walking, right? We were walking, exercising our First Amendment right. But people joined in, just jumped in. They said, oh, we're so glad you're here. And so there was that kind of community. And the thing was, it was supposed to rain real hard on Saturday, but the sun came out. And I was looking for signs of God speaking. And as we got to the museum, we were led by the African drummers, and people started dancing. And as we walked past the museum, and then we get to the end, and then there was the two shade trees that are across the street from the museum. And we got under that tree, and it was just an aura of spirituality. We had Reverend Siobhan Arlene Bradley, Reverend Tony Lee, and others, Reverend Willie Wilson, and others, who also brought the spiritual element of prayer into it. So It was more than just a march.
So how do you respond to those who say marching worked in the 60s, but we're in 2025 and Trump has no guardrails? Marching is not going to curtail his actions.
Well, if you can't control the politics, the power of people doesn't change. It's one of the tools. It's not the only tool, but if you're trying to elevate a message and get it out to the public, there's only so many ways you can do that. And one of those ways is peaceful protests, right? And so people can say, oh, that doesn't work anymore. Well, it's worked since the beginning of time. So I don't believe that. I think we get caught up in just trying to narrow a focus and say, well, that's what the other generation did, but history doesn't bode well for that to be the case. Mm. And that's so, across the world, not just in the United States.
So a month after the order was issued, owners of some historical objects loaned to the museum said their items are being wiped from the displays. Some visitors were shocked to see some gone, saying they strategically planned their visits to be able to see the most artifacts in case some were removed. Civil rights activist Reverend Amos Brown says he was recently notified that two of the artifacts he loaned to the museum would be returned to him. He described one of the books written by Reverend George Washington Williams in 1880 as a precious and most historic book and the first history of the Negro race. The other book was a Bible he took to demonstrations with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Jesse Jackson. Brown said he lent the artifacts to the Smithsonian in 2016. He said the museum always gave him the option of donating the books permanently or renewing the loan, but this time he wasn't asked. James Early, I want to ask you, is that museum nicknamed the Blacksonian?
Well, that is the response, what I would say, the wholesome cultural nationalist response of calling it the Blacksonian. But I think we have to have a broader vantage point than we are the crucible. We are the test case in the history of democracy in this country. The framework that African-American history is American history is not just a poetic kind of flip of a term. When you look at all of the legal and juridical precedents to expand democracy, which has been initiated over the centuries by African-Americans, it has opened up the public space for other groups, including white women, Latinos, et cetera, to step forward. So while this is a characteristic racialized attack, it is also a broadside on the Smithsonian at large. When you look at the executive order, while it targets the African American Museum in particular, which has been typical of Haitian immigrants as contrasted with Central American or South American immigrants, when you look at the attack on women, the attack on Black women, particularly public figures, which is an attack on women at large. And while the transgender attacks have not revealed as consistently the racialized profile, racism has been a fundamental part of the Trump MAGA attack. So the attack on the African American Museum is the frontal piece of the attack on the Smithsonian at large. Read Restoring Truth and Sanity to American History, which is the executive order. It targets women, it targets transgenders, it targets Latinos, but it starts by hitting at African Americans. And so then as we step forward, we have to recognize that we are the frontal piece for mass organizing horizontally across the country, not just around the Black Southern.
So now you worked at the Smithsonian for over 30 years. What did it mean to have an entire museum dedicated to the African-American experience?
Oh, it's a fundamental advance for African-Americans dating back to the Civil War when the proposition of a national museum first emerged and there were numerous attempts to do so. So to have been a part of a generation in which it came to fruition was an extraordinary recognition of the historical role, as has been pointed out by Melanie Campbell, of our ancestral struggles. Mm-hmm. I'm also from Florida. Okay. The Moors fighting and dying for our freedom. I was there with Lonnie Bunch, with Spencer Crew. Spencer Crew was the first African-American director of the National Museum of American History at a time in which Lonnie Bunch, the present secretary and founding director of the African-American Museum, was chief curator. I was there with the extraordinary, brilliant warrior who brought me there, Bernice Johnson Reagan. And so this was an extraordinary moment to see Lonnie Bunch and others bring this museum into fruition as a part of a century-long struggle.
And so what was your reaction when you heard of Trump's executive order? What were your first thoughts and feelings?
Well, first of all, I'm not surprised. Museums, particularly the African-American Museum, have been the latest iteration of the attack on American intellectual, cultural, and aesthetic frameworks, which have been advanced by African-Americans, women, Latinos, gay and lesbians, transgendered, working class white people. None of these people were focused in the official stories. That's why we have these centric focus museums. If the National Museum of American History had been representative of American history, we would not have a history necessarily of these other centric museums. And so it is the sectoral struggles of these different groups to be an equal part of the public space and to articulate their aesthetic and cultural and historical focus that has given rise. So I'm not surprised that museums have been the latest attack. Again, as Melanie Campbell has pointed out, the whole state of Florida book banning, the dismantling of the education department, libraries have been attacked. Hollywood has been attacked, Hollywood movies, and they've organized right-wing white male artists in Hollywood to be special advisors to Trump on Hollywood. So this is part and parcel of a broad intellectual, aesthetic, cultural, historical attack to rewrite the narrative as a white male, Christian, Eurocentric, white supremacist narrative, and which at best these other groups are second-class citizens.
And when you mention Hollywood and filmmakers, we have to raise the name of Ryan Coogler, who has produced one of the most box office successes in his film Sinners. But one report, James, notes that over 60% of the museum's funding comes from federal dollars. Does that mean Trump can cut off that funding if he chooses?
It means that is probably the strategic move that he will make in an attempt to cut it off, because that is a congressional authorization of funds to the Smithsonian. And so he will go after Congress, Johnson and the other right wingers. They have already put a right-wing Cuban-American on the board, because I can't recall if it's two or three, it's three members, I think, of the House and of the Senate that are appointed along with the Chief Justice position of the Supreme Court and the position of the Vice Presidency. Those are standing elements with several citizens from across the country. So yes, that will be the attempt. And I think we can anticipate that we will see the Congress attack certain elements of the Smithsonian's budget. It will not be able to do the whole budget, just as it has in the last week or so attacked Howard University, I think attacking like 60 some odd million dollars of the congressional appropriation for Howard University.
Wow. And so we're going to go to a break in a moment, but very briefly, if you can comment on the fact the executive order that Trump signed tasked Vice President J.D. Vance with, quote, cleansing the Smithsonian Institution of ideologies that divide society or undermine American values, unquote. That's so subjective. I can't imagine that would be a fair and unbiased process.
No, it will not be a fair and unbiased process. And he will run into struggles on the Board of Regents. One of the things that we don't know is how is the Smithsonian internally dealing with this attack. And we need to try and get more investigation and information on that. So there will be various members of the Board of Regents who will resist this. And he will not be able to close down the African-American Museum. That is my true belief. He will certainly be able to mutate some of the dimensions of the Smithsonian at large and the African-American Museum in particular. But I do not anticipate that they will be able to close down either the African-American Museum Because they would have to close down the entire Smithsonian, actually.
Okay. So we're going to go to a break now to give our treasured listeners a chance to show their appreciation for WPFW and What's at Stake. And when we come back, we're going to speak with Pamela Farrell, who has several of her own personal artifacts in the museum. And she has a surprising take on what's going on inside the museum and why some artifacts are disappearing. So stick with us. I want to welcome our esteemed program director, Katia Stitt, to the studio. Katia, are you there?
I absolutely am, and I am stepping in high cotton this morning with your guests. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Verna. You make it so easy to pitch. It's a wonderful program. It's informative. It's enlightening. It gives history. It gives context. This is what WPFW is about, and it is certainly what Verna, as a journalist and executive producer of What's at Stake, is about. It is the caliber of programming that you have come to expect on Wednesday mornings at 9 a.m. So we have a goal of $500 this hour. It's 9:20. We have 40 minutes to do this. We can do it together, folks. Many hands make light work. The number to call, 800-222-9739. And Verna, you know, we've said it many times since we began this pledge drive, but it is so true. If you are an appointment listener, if you're that new listener that hasn't committed yet to WPFW, but you've been listening now for months, maybe you just came into the city, maybe you discovered us somehow going to the lower end of the dial, and you said, oh my goodness, this is a treasure. I'm listening every day. I'm listening. I'm taking it in. Now is the time to give back. Now is the time to be in solidarity with What's at Stake and the great work that Verna and all of her producers, she is the executive producer, but there is a collective that all of them do, because we really do need your support. A free press only remains free when it is supported by the people, and I would dare say exclusively the people. We are blessed right now to not have governmental support. Imagine the whirlwind, even as we've been named in Project 2025, imagine the whirlwind we might be in right now if we were receiving governmental funds, which we have not been for over 10 years. We do not take corporate money. We do have no underwriting. It is really you, the people, that sustains us, and we're proud of that fact, and we rely on you again and again. We come to you 4 times a year, but we do it because that is the way to stay free and independent and unembedded, and this is what you expect. So the number to call, 800-222-9739 or WPFWFM.org, to support this conversation today. African American history, we say it all the time. It might sound cliche, but that is the history of this nation, period. As the children say, we put that on period. We put that on full stop. You know what I mean? So it is it's American history. So when we erase us, you're erasing everything about this country. Let's be clear. And they are bringing this conversation to light. $500. I'm sorry, Vern. I got a little excited.
It's okay. You're excited. I'm excited. Our guests are excited. This is really, you know, this is an unprecedented moment we're living in right now. There are new assaults on our liberties and basic rights almost every week when you wake up and watch the news. Our due process is now in question. A basic fundamental right of being in America. The freedom of speech is under attack. People are actually afraid to speak out. Some are afraid to attend rallies. So I'm having difficulty getting people to actually be on the radio and tell their story about being fired. We do manage to come up with some, but there's so many that are just too fearful that this vengeful regime, as we're calling, will not actually, do something harmful to them. I'm losing thought, but
take revenge.
Yes. Thank you. And you know, they're afraid to speak out or to appear on the show. There were some people that have things in the museum that we're afraid. They say, I don't want to be a target in his sights. You know, I just can't do it. And travel nowadays, basic right to travel, you can do it, but it's scary. I mean, you've got air traffic controllers that are losing contact with the pilots. I don't know, you know, how many planes have fallen out of the sky since the Trump regime has been in office. Then you have the whole border issue. If you leave the country, are you going to be able to get back in? Is there going to be an issue? Are you going to be detained? He wants to deport so-called homegrowns. What exactly does that mean? Does that mean that at some point, if he gets permission to do that, if you run a stop sign, he may decide that you need to be deported? We're under attack. We have to do something. WPFW is a voice against historical erasures. And it's, we stand here fiercely independent, holding the powerful accountable and uplifting the voices of activist scholars and everyday people fighting for our basic justices. Can't rely on the Supreme Court and the Republicans in Congress. They're feckless. The media has been a safeguard in the past, but now the media is under attack. But we are independent. We're independent fiercely, but we are dependent on you, the listeners. We need you to continue your support. Went to that 48th celebration last week, Katia. It was awesome. There were so many people there. It was crowded. You all had to put up extra tables to accommodate them all. Everyone was saying how, you know, wonderful it is to be a part of WPFW. We need that support to show up right now. The number to call is 202-588-9739. 202-588-9739. Make a donation, whatever you can afford to provide at this time. If you're in a position where you can provide, do more, please do more for those that are not in a position to do anything. 202-588-9739. Katia?
I just want to close by saying that, you know, freedom is not free. We pay for it one way or another. And so right now, you see how we're paying for it, right? We think we're getting a free deal. We thought we'd get a better economy of this or that or the other. We're not getting any of that. What we are getting is total capitulation in this moment. But we also know from fascism experts that you don't capitulate in a moment like this. In fact, you push back, you resist. And WPFW is not only resisting this moment, we've been in the resistance since 1977. What's at stake? This program has now for decades been part of that resistance, speaking truth about power fearlessly. Fearlessly, because that is what the moment requires, courage. And we ask you to be in solidarity, to show your courage, to show your support for a free and independent media, for a wonderful program like What's at Stake that is lightning, giving us historical context and present day reality. In addition, it also offers what we can do about it. We don't need to just sit by and wring our hands and clutch the pearls. We can actually do something. And so we get all of that from What's at Stake. So please pledge that support right now. Make that call or that click that makes the difference. $500 to go. 800-222-9739. WPFWFM.org. The people do indeed have the power through programming like What's at Stake.
Let us know we're not in this alone. Thank you so much, Katia. So before the break, I promised that we would hear from Pamela Farrell, who actually has several personal items in the National African American History and Culture Museum as a result of her work as a young fashion designer and research that she conducted around Black male hair growth and the military. Good morning, Pamela. Pamela, you've been patient, and I appreciate that. First, tell us what items you have on display in the museum and the importance of each.
Before I say that, I do want to say thank you to WPFW because for being an independent radio station that provides information to people that we may not get in other radio sources. They have supported Cornrows & Company in the 1980s. We have been interviewed on WPFW to bring, you know, the message to the people that otherwise would not have happened in typical media. So thank you. So the items that we have in the museum are related to the work that we did around hair discrimination, as well as what we call economic liberty, the right to be able to earn an honest living without overburdensome government regulation. And so when I was contacted by a curator for the museum, my first thought was, I am happy to just have a home for my artifacts, for things that we have done. Because, you know, you wonder, you know, when you die, will someone come in and just throw all these things away? You know, and so having it in the museum means to me that it has a home, it has a place, and it'll be around for a long time. Some of the things that I have, what's on display now is one of my books, and it is there because we pioneered the natural hair care movement in the United States. Also, there is an interview by video. The other artifacts are a poster board that I used when I presented to the United States Army in reference to their grooming policy that they changed, where they banned twists and locks. And so I had literally 5 days to put together a presentation. So I put together the poster board that usually, you know, kids do in elementary school. Mm-hmm. So they have that poster board. They have the mannequin heads with the hair on it.
So wait a minute. Now you're saying you helped, you persuaded the military to change their policy with regard to African-American hairstyles?
Yes. So in 1993, we were able to get the Navy. And once, you know, one department changes, others will follow. So we were able to get the Navy to change the grooming policy to allow women in particular to wear braids. In 2014, someone changed the policy so that you could not wear twists or locks in the military. So I got a phone call, you know, people who were enlisted were in a panic because now they could not wear their hair in the styles they had been wearing it. And so I, you know, they, now this is the era of social media. So, you know, they went on to social media and, you know, they were just putting everything out there. I knew who I was talking to. So I went old school and I sent a letter. I sent a letter to the United States Secretary of Army, and it was another letter to someone else. A week later, I got a phone call from the Pentagon, and they wanted to meet with me. And they asked, you know, did I want to come to the Pentagon, or should they send someone to me? So I said, send someone to me, have them come here. And so they sent someone, lovely young lady came. And at the time, I was working on my Circle Hair Project. Circle Hair Project is hair has a shape that determines the hair's characteristics and what styles are compatible with it. Mm-hmm. And so while she was here, you know, I had her to take a look at this, and she asked if I would do a presentation before 22 senior officials from around the country.
And so some of those things are in the museum at this time.
Yes. Correct. So that poster board that I use introducing Circle Hair is there.
Okay.
Another artifact that they have is...
Well, I don't want to interrupt you. I want you to hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break for the community calendar. And when we come back in 30 seconds... please continue with that thought, the other artifacts.
Peace! This is your social justice calendar for the week of May 5th, 2025. To begin on Wednesday, May 7th, from 7 to 9 p.m., there will be the start of a Malcolm X birthday celebration series at Zinkofa Video Books and Cafe, 2714 Georgia Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C. More info at sankofa.com. Thursday, May 8th, the Institute for Policy Studies invites you to a talk and book signing with author Carolyn Woods Eisenberg in conversation with IPS fellow Phyllis Bennis, featuring her new book, Fire and Rain, Nixon, Kissinger, and the Wars in Southeast Asia, at the Institute for Policy Studies, 1301 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest DC, from 12:30 to 2 p.m. More info and RSVP is requested on ips-dc.org/events. On Thursday, May 8th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., Africa World Now Project and Bloom Bars present the award-winning film on racism, colonial exploitation, and migration, Pieces the Identities, by Congolese filmmaker Mweze Nganura at Bloom Bars, 3222 11th Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. More info at www.bloombars.com. On Sunday, May 11th, from 7 to 9 p.m., the continued series of Malcolm X, the film screening of Malcolm X, Make It Plain, will be held at Sankofa Video Books and Cafe, 2714 Georgia Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C. For more info, visit sankofa.com. WPFW's Social Justice Calendar connects you to grassroots activism in the DMV. Submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. This is due by Thursday at 5 p.m., at least 1 week in advance of your event. Please donate to WPFW for our spring pledge drive by calling 202-588-9739. 202-588-9739. Cash App at $WPFWFM or going to WPFWFM.org and clicking the donate button. WPFW's Social Justice Calendar helps build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
And welcome back to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We were listening to Pamela Farrell, the owner of Cornrows and Company, and she's explaining, Pamela, you were just going to tell us about the other items that you have on display, or were invited to have on display in the African American Museum of History and Culture.
Right. So all of the items are not on display. There is what you call a collection. And so they have a collection of artifacts that Cornrows and Company has donated to the museum. There's only right now the book and this video that's on display. Currently, they have on display four designs, fashion designs of mine. The curator asked, you know, how did you come to do hair? I came here to Washington, D.C. as a fashion designer. I was a young fashion designer, 15 years old. And so they had those artifacts. She asked if I still had any of the things that I made. And so that's a part of the collection. They have a part of the collection pens that were signed for bills where states have changed laws to exempt hair braiders from cosmetology. So all of these things that we, you know, did, we have the actual, I like to say the receipts. And so they have these in the collection. I think a lot of times people expect that their collection will be presented. And what I, for me, it was just, I was happy that these artifacts had a home. You know, whether they put them on display, you know, I understand there's so many, they have so many artifacts, you know, they got to a point where they couldn't accept anymore, you know. I mean, if you think about the history of African Americans in this country, man, we have so much history. We're just scratching the surface. All the things that we created, that we invented, that we changed, we are America. And that's what that museum represents. And so
now you,
I don't know, in my lifetime, I'll see it all. But I would say to folk, go to the museum. You know, a lot of these things out here are, you know, they're untruths. And what I mean by that is, and it can be spread pretty quickly, because I got a text and someone said, the African American Museum, and she put the stool, right? And I'm like, yes, you know, and I text her back and I put stool, question mark, because I hadn't been really listening to the news. I don't listen to it every day like I used to. And so anyway, she was talking about the stool that was removed.
From the Greensboro lunch counter protest.
Yeah. So I called the curator to just find out what's going on. All right. I didn't want to spread that information. And she said to me, no. Nothing has been removed. And so And the other thing that she said to me is people need to go to the museum. They need to donate to the museum. And they need to call the museum to get information.
So are you saying that this curator told you nothing at all has been removed as a result of the Trump's executive order? Well, a Virginia resident, Aaron Weaver, is quoted in an NBC News story saying, I know certain exhibits that were there that were missing, like Nat Turner's Bible. Go ahead.
Here's the thing. When people donate artifacts, you can donate them permanently or you can donate them for a period of time. And so what we don't know is whether that Bible was donated for a period of time and then it was returned. And also in a museum, they rotate exhibits.
Exactly.
So, you know, an exhibit is not going to be there for 100 years unless they decide it's going to be there. But for the most part, they'll be rotated. So, you know, I don't know whether that was the case, whether that museum was that artifact was returned because it was not donated.
I do notice that on the website itself, it says that some artifacts are removed to preserve their authenticity because, for example, a book like the one he's referring to, Nat Turner's Bible, perhaps they say the lighting on the actual exhibit can cause it to fade over time. If it's there too long, the pages can become brittle. It'll lose its authenticity as the materials will. So Linda St. Thomas, a chief spokesperson for the Smithsonian, says the Greensboro, North Carolina lunch counter is not leaving the Smithsonian. It's on display at the National Museum of American History, where it has been for many years. The National Museum of African American History and Culture also has two stools from the original counter. One is on exhibit at all times. The other rotates so they can be properly preserved. So that may be contributing to some of the stories that we're hearing about items being returned to individuals as per their contract. But Verna, James, go right ahead. I was just going to call on you, but go ahead. What are you?
So I think people need to be cold and calculating and not emotional about this. We need to be disciplined and do our homework and our investigation. So look at the Smithsonian. It's called the Smithsonian Response to Reports About Artifacts on View, April 28, 2025. I'm not going to read it, but it captures, Verna, what you just said. I also wanted to add to Pamela Farrell's, Cornwall & Company is an example of the proactivity that African-Americans have always had in opening up a democratic space for us and opening up a democratic space for others. In the 1980s, Pamela's husband called me with an urgent, fierce call saying, I'm in my car. I think cell phones had just come out, those big clunky cell phones that you had in your car. And he says, I am on my way to the National Museum of Air and Space, and where I am going to raise some hell because a Black woman guard has just been told that she cannot wear her hair in cornrows. And you must act, James Early. This is what citizens must do. I mean, they went to the assistant secretary who oversaw the National Museum of Air and Space. They stopped that policy because of Black American citizens, not because of me. I was simply an emissary for the community, as many publics. The Smithsonian is a public institution, and we are public servants. We don't own it. So I just wanted to indicate that the Pamela's story is not just one of contributing artifacts, but it is one of social activism. And we must have a proprietary orientation, not just to the African American Museum, but to the Smithsonian as a whole, as exemplified in that history about the change in air and space and the defense of our aesthetic.
And we need to underscore the role that you played in that. You may downplay it, but had you not stepped up and spoke to the issue and addressed certain people that were in charge of that, no telling how that might have ended up. So let's not downplay the role you played in that, James Early. And James, also, I understand there's a legal group strategizing around this issue. If In fact, the Trump administration begins to dismantle parts of the museum in the future. What is the strategy? I know you're not a lawyer, but you're participating in the group.
So one of the things that we have seen as a part of the resistance across the board to the Trump MAGA attack on freedom of speech and democratic rights with all groups, whether it's federal employees, the Labor Department, or other places, is legal suits. And of course, legal suits have been an instrumentation of the African-American movement to institutionalize our protests and our advance. We start with protests and critique, and then we get these legal precedents that opens a democratic space so that there's a group of lawyers, Donald Temple, who is well known, one of the most important lawyers in the United States, and therein one of the most important African-American lawyers in the United States, who is a social justice lawyer, is organizing with lawyers to look at potential legal action. I will not say more about that because it's in process and the public will hear more about it through its messaging committee and through its political outreach committee. But please contact Donald if you are interested in being supportive of that, and so that we can look forward to some kind of legal cases. The African American Museum in Boston has taken up a legal action because I think they were denied a grant that had been authorized through the Institute for Museums and Library Services. And I suspect that the African American Museum Association is also in process of taking up these issues.
Okay, and we should mention Donald Temple is also a programmer on this station, WPFW.
Donald Temple.
Donald Temple, oh my God. Donald Temple, he's a lawyer, he's also.
And he used to be my lawyer.
Oh, okay. So if you need to contact, but this is the, go ahead, Melanie, very briefly, because we got to go back and earn and raise some money.
Okay. And I'll make sure I do that today. I did, because I have to get to this meeting. I was supposed to be at 9:30. I apologize. But I did want to say that what we did on Saturday was a start, right? We were supporting Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw with the African American Policy Forum with the Freedom to Learn campaign. And so I do want you folks to, if they want to be involved in some of the activism and some of the ways that we, and not just as you said, it's not just about the African American Museum, it's about holistically across this country. Yes. That we have to fight this. And so if people want to get involved, they can go to freedomtolearn.net. And I will make sure that I take the time today to contribute as soon as I get out of this meeting.
We thank you. We thank you, Melanie.
And thank you for what you do.
Oh, absolutely. That's what we're here for.
Getting the facts out. Mm-hmm.
That's what we're here for.
And I love
you.
And I apologize. I have to step off.
Okay. We appreciate your taking part in this heretofore. I want to invite our program director, Katia Stitt, back in. Katia, are you there?
I am, Verna, and we have some folks to thank. We want to say thank you to new member. Just see, hearing that clarion call. Douglas Ignatius Parker Jr. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
new member. Maryland. Mm-hmm. And we also want to say thank you to Paul out of Arlington, Virginia. Thank you for your generous pledge of support. We have 13 minutes to go and we have $380 to raise. We can do it, folks. Many hands make light work. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. You got your orders from James Early and from the other guests there. We know what to do. To stop the foolishness. And that is what WPFW is about. That is what What's at Stake is about, giving you the tools, the history, the context, the information, so that we can stop the foolishness together. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org are the ways to connect. Let us help Verna make this goal deserving of a program. $380 to go, 800-222-9739. Verna?
Yes. You know, if just three people donate $100, that would get us very close to our goal. You can also cash app it at $WPFWFM, or you can go online to WPFWFM.org. And of course, the number to call is 202-588-9739. Now, don't let us be in this all alone. We need backup. We need you. We need our listeners to support this, to support us. You know, we are fiercely independent. We know that we are targeted in Project 2025, but that is not going to stop us from doing exactly what needs to be done and from saying exactly what needs to be said and from working hard to bring on the guests that are brave enough and courageous enough to tell the story, to give you information. Where else have you heard the real skinny on what's happening with the African American Museum? You know, there's a lot of reports out there that we're finding out that's not necessarily true. So apparently nothing has been taken from the museum as yet. But as James Early told us, the chances of them actually closing down the museum are slim to none. But there's still work to be done. There's resistance. We still need to keep this radio station in operation. And to do that, we need you, the listeners, 202-588-9739 or Cash App, $WPFWFM, or you can go online to WPFWFM.org and make your contribution there.
We only have $380, Verna. This could be a sustaining member right here. $380 divided over 12 months. We are golden. Whatever you need to do, whatever you want to do, whatever is in your heart and your pocketbook to do, or your wallet to do, please do it now. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. I was just channeling my mother with that word pocketbook. I hadn't heard that. You don't know where that came from. You know what I mean. Wherever the money is for you, give some to WPFW now. Become a sustaining member now. $380 to go, folks. There's still more to this conversation, so we don't want to take up the time imploring you to pledge, but many hands do make light work, and we're so close to the goal. $380, 800-222-9739. Verna, I'm hoping we will have some folks to thank towards the very, very end of the program.
Yes. Okay. So we're going to go back to our panel now. Melanie had to leave us, but Pamela, so did you ever think as a 15-year-old making, designing dresses that those dresses would someday end up in a National Museum of African American History?
No, never in my imagination. And I'm especially excited about that because that was my dream of what I was supposed to be. You know, we make plans and God makes plans. And so, you know, most people know me for hair. So my life changed when I, you know, lost my job because of my braided hairstyle. I was fired because of my braided hairstyle. And that changed it. That just changed my life in terms of what I am doing now. So it's nice to know that those artifacts will be preserved again, because, you know, I saved them. I have things that I made, you know, when I was very young.
Mm-hmm. So, what was your reaction when you heard of Trump's executive order to basically whitewash or make the museum more palatable for Americans who are uncomfortable with the truths of our history?
So this is what I learned, and I have to thank my son for this, is not to react when you first hear information. My son says to me, you know, if I hear something on social media, whatever, and he says, Mom, because he fact checks. He says, that's not true. He said, you have to fact check it before you start telling it to other people. And so that's what I've learned from him. And I think it's really valuable advice because we're in a reactionary mode. You know, we hear something, someone sends us a text or calls us, and then, you know, our blood pressure rises and we're ready to go to war. And then you find out, oh, that's not exactly as, you know, it appears. And so that is one of the things that I really try to encourage people is to really fact check before you start spreading this information. right now, our leadership, we have a provocateur. And the whole goal is to keep people upset, to keep people, you know, arguing and fear and you know, telling these untruths. And I think if we're going to survive and get through this and really be on top, and I believe we will, because hey, this is nothing new. I think back with what our ancestors have gone through, and they didn't have social media. Mm-hmm. They had social networks, they had community. And so, you know, that's, we got to get back to that. That's really, really important.
Mm. And James Early, how does the resistance look? How do you suggest interested people resist to what's taking place, specifically with regard to the museum?
Visit the museum, donate funds to the museum, join the protest to the museum. Melanie has pointed out a number of initiatives taken. Contact Donald Temple about the legal structure of the museum, but also put some pressure on the Democratic Party. Verna, you noted the falling stats of public support for the people who voted for MAGA Trump. But there is also falling support for the leadership of the Democratic Party. Hakeem Jeffries and Gregory Meeks from New York. Hakeem Jeffries leads the House. Meeks is head of the Foreign Affairs for the minority group, have put forth a statement calling on the president not to interrupt the funding of the Smithsonian. But they've got to do more than that. In the Black Caucus, there should be a caucus looking at freedom of speech, freedom of expression, which means libraries, museums, pre-collegiate education, universities, historical Black colleges. We have no evidence that they are organizing. So the empty statements, we need to also put some pressure on the Democratic Party because it has the infrastructure and the funding, although in my view, it has been very ineffective. But that's democracy, the demos, meaning ordinary people, quasha, the power of the people.
Mm.
We have been the crucible of democracy in this country.
Mm-hmm, yes.
African-American history is American history. And we have to take a leadership position, not only in defense of ourselves in terms of resistance, but we also have to build resistance with transformation. To resist means to put your hands up and not allow people to push you back.
Okay.
We can't stand in place. We have to be resisting and pushing forward at the same time.
Again, marching forward.
Trump, as well as against the ineffective aspects of the leadership of the Democratic Party, including Black Americans. We don't hear enough of the voices of Black elected officials around this attack on the African-American Museum. And so we have to put pressure on both sides. The Black American people, in the interest of all American people.
Okay. James Early. Katia, are you back? Do you have some more information?
I am right here, Verna. And
yes.
We're climbing. You know, we have Angelina, who says, thank you for your programming. Angie from Bowie, thank you so much,
Angie. Thank you, Angelina.
We have $355 to go, folks. We have 3 minutes. Won't you consider a few people becoming a sustaining member at this point would make it happen. 800-222-9739. If two people could commit to $200 over a 12-month period, that would do it. That would exceed the goal today. And this show has been so fabulous and so important. Important. Not only did you get history and context, you also got, most importantly, what we can do about it. And that is the purpose of WPFW, not just to highlight what is happening, but to help us collectively as a community figure out how we can move forward and resist. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org, $355 to make the goal for what's at stake. Verna, thank you for an excellent program.
Yes, and thank you. Thank you, Katia. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of What's at Stake. I want to thank our esteemed panel of guests, Melanie Campbell, President and CEO of the National Coalition of Black and Civic Participation and one-time resident fellow at Harvard University, James Early, director of the Anacostia Museum, director of Cultural Heritage Policy, and retired Assistant Secretary for Education and Public Services for the Smithsonian, and Pamela Farrell, entrepreneur, natural hair care expert, and owner of Cornrows and Company, and artifact owner of African American Museum Display. Thanks to my engineer extraordinaire, Mike Masella, my esteemed colleague, program director, Katia Stitt, and most importantly, you, the listener, thank you for your contributions. Next week, the Reverend Mark Thomas will be in the